This is the Uncommon Man Podcast.
Welcome to Tump. That is the Uncommon Man Podcast. This is Duggar.
And this is Adam.
And we are back yet again to bring you another episode of shenanigans and tomfoolery.
A heap of helping of geekery.
All right.
Yes.
And we got a couple of things on the plate today. First, we do want to apologize for the long, languid break in between our episodes. In fact, the episode that you listened prior to this one actually was recorded
in August, actually.
In August.
We've had some technical difficulties here and there, and I've been very busy with school, and I'm sure you've been busy in your job. In the interim, I actually got a job at an EB Games, so I'm even closer to the video games that I love so much. So that's been a very interesting thing. And of course, the main thing in the past few months that's happened as far as video games go is, well, the Halo 3 launch. It's just been, you know, it was this big thing all over the world, and, you know.
And, also, there's been a lot of controversy over some of Sony's latest marketing moves, notably their PS3 re-release, which we'll get into later.
Very much so. And then finally, there's a lot of sci-fi and fantasy seems to be going on the TV nowadays.
Yes, primetime television is back with its fall lineup in full swing, and we have shows coming to us now. Season 2 of Heroes, Bionic Woman was released on NBC this fall. Journeyman was out. And there's even a new show hosted by Stephen Hawking, which...
We'll have a little more on that later. But you know what? For now, meet us on the other side of this music.
Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out. Welcome back to that same old place that you laughed about. Well, the names have all changed since you hung around, but those dreams have remained.
So as I said before the break there, the biggest thing probably to happen to video games in the past little while was the Halo 3 launch, a highly anticipated game for the Xbox 360, and it's not coming out for the PC for a little while, but the launch took place on September 25th, and I was there for it, actually. We had a midnight opening at the EB where I work now, and We probably had about 100-150 people show up who had reserved the game ahead of time. And we managed to get through them in about 20-25 minutes or so, thanks to us having, I think, 4 people working that night. So that was no big deal. But, you know, Halo has become sort of a recognized name in the world of video games, whether you're in the video game culture or outside of it. You know, you'll see news report. You saw news reports for announcing the Halo launch.
Well, and it smashed sale records.
Right, absolutely. I haven't seen any estimates from it, but you know, you can expect that there were.
I had seen one estimate that it was somewhere in the hundreds of millions in its first couple of hours.
You can certainly expect that they probably had at least 2 million pre-orders on the game, at least that many.
And it's phenomenal what Halo has done to the video game market, particularly the Xbox specifically. It's just such a well-known and at this point a very well-respected title. It's not one that I'm very good at. It's not one that I necessarily prefer. That's not my style of game. My brother, he plays it. He's pretty good. Not as good as that kid that won all of that money in those tournaments.
I believe you're speaking of Fatality.
Yes.
But, yes, there's you know, a lot of buzz about Halo 3, and apparently it's a very good game. We haven't played it, and I doubt I ever will, because I'm just... not that kind of person either, you know. I'm not really big into shooters at all. And I wasn't a huge fan of the first Halo, so I never really got into the series. But,
Yes, actually,
a quick Google search.
Yes. Long live Google. A quick Google search tells us, according to informationweek.com, that it topped $300 million in its first week of sales.
That's pretty big. You wonder if something even as big as, like, say, Super Mario Galaxy is going to do that well in the market when it first comes out. I mean, because, you know, Mario is even more widely recognized than Halo. But, you know, you get the sense that it probably is not going to have as much of an impact on the gaming world, almost.
Well, you have to think about what Halo is, precisely. Halo is a much more, and I use quotation marks here, which you can clearly see, is much more hardcore. The type of people that play it are much more serious about playing it. Mario, we all know him, we love him, but he's a casual play.
Halo is more of an adult game also, you know, so there's that.
There's a whole mindset around the people that play Halo as opposed to the people who play Mario.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I play Mario games because they amuse me, but I don't get hooked on them.
Right.
You're talking about people who they base their social interactions around a shoot 'em up, and I'm sure there's going to be someone out there who wants to hit me for that particular comment.
I'm sure. But that was another thing that that my manager at the store was actually just, you know, completely excited about, was that in Halo 3, you can take, like, recordings, basically, of your matches against other people, your multiplayer matches, and you can save those and then, like, switch camera angles and, you know, basically just do whatever you want with that. It's a good way to save, like, your really good plays or your good kills, whatever.
And then it also boasted the 4-player co-op.
Yes, there is that,
which a lot of people were extremely excited about.
Mm.
I know my brother was.
As well, they should be, though. You know, so many games aren't co-op anymore. You know, ever since we shifted out of 2D, it seems like it's been harder and harder to find games that allow you to play two people or more at once.
The last game I think that I played that seriously depended on multiplayer was Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles,
which was a
It was fun enough.
There was a large cost in order to join the game, basically, because you had to have, you know, the GBA and the GameCube link for four people. So,
But back to Halo 3.
Yes.
It sold remarkably well. People knew it was going to. It's still selling. It's a very real market presence right now.
Mm-hmm.
And while I'm not a Halo fan, you know, I'm sure that Microsoft will continue to sponsor such ventures, given its economic success.
Any big launch, of course, is not without its glitches or its hang-ups. There were three versions of Halo 3 originally planned for release. There was the regular version, which is just the game, bare bones. There's the limited edition, which is the game and some extras. And then there's the legendary edition, which is the game, the extras, and a case for the games, for the discs, shaped like one of the helmets from the characters in Halo. And the limited edition, shortly after the game released, the limited edition was found to the spindle that's inside the case was not holding the discs properly. It was a case of poor design, and so some people's discs got, you know, kind of ruffled around in shipment, and they ended up scratched when people bought them perfectly new, and there was kind of a you know,
I would be upset about that.
Yeah, kind of an uproar about that. So that was the only real the real bad thing concerning the Halo launch. Everything else seemed to go pretty smoothly.
So, kudos to Microsoft. And if you picked up Halo 3 and you happen to enjoy listening to us mouth off about nothing, please drop us a line. Let us know what you think about the game.
Absolutely. You know, we've called out Sony a number of times on this podcast, and
one would almost think we didn't like them.
Almost. And, you know, it doesn't look as if that trend is going to continue or going to quit anytime soon because, well, there are two things, basically. The first thing is that Sony recently released a new version of their PSP called the PSP 2000. It's slimmer, has a silver body instead of a black one, and I think... And you can plug it into your TV, and that's about the only differences between it and the original PSP. So, you know, same game library and all that, if you can call those games.
I hold in my hand, for all of our listeners to see, the four games that I own for my PSP.
Yeah. Well, actually, in fairness, I only own two games for my GBA, or my DS right now. I do own a Game Boy Advance game also.
But that's because you're a big fan of trade-ins.
Yes,
and
it's because I'm poor.
Of pandering to your particular interests at the time. I, on the other hand, tend to amass things and hold on to them because I like them.
And you still only have four PSP games.
Yes.
So,
although I will have five as of October 9th.
Yes, yes, with the release of...
of Final Fantasy Tactics, the greatest Final Fantasy of all time.
Yes. I still like Tactics Advance. I have not played the original, so I am not qualified to comment on it, but I liked Tactics Advance, and I know a lot of other people didn't.
In another podcast at another time, I'm sure we can discuss the pros and cons of them. I happen to like the Tactics better.
Yes.
But going back to Sony's whole thing, back when they had touted the PSP, there was a lot of anticipation for it. And at the time, it seemed like...
rightly so. There was a lot of technology behind it, and the games looked fairly good.
Yeah, well, and even beyond the hardware itself, it was the concept that Sony was finally jumping into the handheld market, and it looked like it was doing it with a strong player.
With multifunctionality, even.
And I was very, very excited about it. I had actually, what I had hoped when I had heard that they were doing that, was that we would see some ports of previous PlayStation titles that are now noticeably difficult to get a hold of. And they did that with Valkyrie Profile, which I was happy about, and they are doing it with Final Fantasy Tactics. But, I mean, that's really it.
Yeah, there's so many others they could have drawn upon.
I mean, there is a large body out on the net, if you bother to look, of people who lament that they have not taken Final Fantasy VII and ported it. I'll tell you, if they did that, there would be no end to people who would buy. There would be people who would buy the PSP for that title alone. And it's just they dropped the ball on it.
There are a lot of people that are not happy with PSP's current lineup of games, with its whole business model even, with Sony's business model as it relates to the PSP. And that's why you see such a large PSP hacking community out there, too. I mean, and I'm not saying either way whether hacking is a good thing or a bad thing, but you know, that would... seem to indicate to me, if I were a Sony executive, that there's something wrong with the way you're pitching your product, or something wrong with the way your product is developed.
And I will admit, I upgraded my firmware to play Valkyrie Profile, but prior to that, I had been running a number of old NES titles on my PSP. I am a large Tetris fan. They had the Double Dragon titles. And it's just, you know... there was a lot to be said in nostalgia, and they could have, I think, on top of building new titles, it's important to introduce new titles and new releases, but I would think that to support the PSP in its initial release, they would have shored it up by releasing ports of old titles to give gamers something to play on it while they developed and introduced the new titles.
Things that you already knew and loved, rather than just going out on a wire with the experimental titles that sort of came out when the PSP first debuted. Like, there was a Twisted Metal and there was a Wipeout, which was actually really good. I played that. I owned a PSP at one point, and I, as you were, running a bunch of ROMs on the side. Don't tell anybody.
I have one word. Rengoku.
Rengoku. Yes, I remember that, actually. It was like
I bought it because it looked really neat.
Like a hack and slash?
No, well, what it was is you were this like cyborg thing, and you were supposed to hack your way up through this tower, upgrading yourself along the way. Mm-hmm. And I got to like the second level of the tower, and I was like, wow, this game is kind of retarded.
But yes.
And I was actually told when I went to GameStop to trade it in that it was the most traded-in game title they had.
I can believe that.
To the point that it was only netting about $2 of credit.
Mm. Yes. So I originally bought a DS, and then I was like, you know what? Their title releases are kind of floundering, and I'm interested in something new. So I actually did go and get a PSP at one point because I was like, you know, they can play MP3s, it can hold my photos or pictures or whatever, and you know, I can watch movies on it. I can also play games.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I just wasn't satisfied with the amount of games or the brand of games that they had on the thing. So I ended up trading that back in and getting another DS.
Yeah, and of course, as you know, I later ended up converting to DS myself. But now, away from the PSP. So the PSP not as good as it could have been.
And well, one more thing, the PSP 2000, the new slim model. One of the biggest things people have complained about concerning the original PSP was that, of course, you only have one analog stick on the thing, and it doesn't really make for a truly like console feeling experience when you only have one analog stick to work with. I know that was one of the big things that brought down the Katamari game that was for the PSP. Is that you had to control it with your analog stick and your face buttons on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
But that and the Ratchet and Clank game that came out was also, you know, it would have been a good game, reviewers said, had there been an extra analog stick there. And, you know, the 2000 doesn't really add anything to the hardware besides making it smaller.
They changed around where some ports are. They changed around how you fit the discs in.
Mm-hmm.
That was about it.
Mm-hmm.
So PSP 2000, it's pretty, but beauty is only skin deep.
Yes. So moving past the PSP, as you were saying,
yes,
before I so rudely interrupted.
Oh, that's fine. Sony's second misstep, and I believe we cited this as a misstep last year. The PlayStation 3.
just see, the whole system itself.
You laugh. You know, we had Microsoft, which released the Xbox 360, and that was a pretty neat move. I think that the Xbox 360 Elite is actually niftier.
Mm.
But
the 360 had, you know, it's had a year's head start on the Wii and PS3, so it's had time to build up plenty in its library.
So, you know, Sony had it had released the PSP, didn't do as well as it had hoped. So you would think that, I mean, and up until this point, Sony had been a fairly consistent hard hitter.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we had come to trust Sony, and when they announced that the PS3, and we watched it and we followed it, we expected more. It released, and
so yeah, the PS3 wasn't what we expected it to be. You know, we saw, you know, how powerful it was graphically. Mm-hmm. And everything, and just turned out that, you know, we were very underwhelmed by the games that came out for it.
Well, and it was targeted at such a select audience because, I'm sorry, I can't go drop $600-$700
right
on a console.
And, you know, there's really nothing out there now for the PS3 that's worth dropping that much money, to me, at least.
I mean, it's like they've got some okay titles. But
I mean, even if Metal Gear Solid 4 is the best game ever in the world that we've ever seen, that's still not going to make me run out and spend $600, $500 or $600 on it.
And it kills me that Final Fantasy 13 will be on the PS3, because unless they come down obnoxiously in the next, you know, 2 years, I just don't see myself getting one.
Which is actually something we were going to talk about. Sony of Europe has recently confirmed that they're going to be offering a 40 gig version of the PS3, which, you know, there's going to be a price cut on it,
mm-hmm.
Obviously, since it's not as big as the other systems. But the thing is, there's no backwards compatibility at all. You can't play PS1 or PS2 games on the thing.
Which makes it even cheaper to produce, but we have an already limited PS3 library.
Very much so. There are somewhere around in the neighborhood of 60 games in the PS3 library.
And, you know, let's take away the only other library that we had.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's probably well over 1,000 games in the PS1 and PS2 libraries combined. And that was one of the biggest things that the PS3 had going for it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what you've seen as the consoles have gotten progressively better is that backwards compatibility is such a huge issue.
It's a huge selling point.
I mean, look at shameless Nintendo plug coming up. Look at the Wii.
Mm-hmm.
It's got the Virtual Console on it, mm-hmm. which allows, what, is it up to 4 or 5 different consoles now?
Oh my, it's the NES, it's the N64, Super Nintendo, Genesis, TurboGrafx, and I heard recently that they're going to start releasing Neo Geo games on it also. So, and I have heard rumors about the Sega Saturn games also.
You know, and so, you know, you're looking at the huge Virtual Console, plus it plays GameCube games.
Mm-hmm. Fully backwards compatible.
The Wii really did a number on an expanded game library. Here is a console that allows you to play almost every classic title you can think of. I mean, because as the months wear on, they're putting out more and more. In fact, they just released Breath of Fire 2 mm-hmm. for the Virtual Console.
Very good, very good.
And, you know, you would expect that the PS3 would be more open to this whole issue of backwards compatibility, but it isn't.
Yeah.
Especially with this particular move. So,
you know, I think people feel more generous in spending their money on a video game system if they know they can play the games that they already have on it. But, you know, if they take out something like that, I don't know that somebody's going to want to spend. I don't know how much they're going to put the price point at, but I would imagine somewhere probably around $400.
If it
makes it to America, that is. This version of the console may not even make it out of Europe, for all I know.
Personally, I'm inclined to think that it will.
I'm sure.
Because I can see people over here buying it.
I'm almost sure it will, but again, with the no backwards compatibility, it's going to have a hard time finding a market, I think.
I'm surprised that the PS3 found as big a market here as it did.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the PS3 was aimed at the hardcore gamers. Once again, my quotation marks that you can see. It was more at the hardcore,
oh, I'm a gamer
type mm-hmm. of people. I know one person who has a PS3.
You know that many people who have PS3?
I know, right?
Huh.
And she's very happy with it. But, you know, and good for her. But, because she just got Heavenly Sword, actually, and she was talking about how fantastic it was.
Mm-hmm.
Me? There's nothing for it. I mean, there's no reason for me to be attracted to it. Not even remotely. So, sadness. Sony dropped the ball, I think, and that seems to be a very widely held opinion.
Mm.
They entered the handheld console competition, the race, and they burned out. They sprinted very well, but they just couldn't do a distance run. And the PS3, it sort of started limping right off the block. Mm. So.
And thus our hate affair with Sony continues. Why don't you all fade away? Trying to dig what we all saw about my generation. I'm trying to cause a big sound.
And we are back. And of course, it is it's October now, so the fall lineup for primetime television is in full swing. And, you know, I'm not really a TV junkie, I'm much more of a video game junkie, but there were several shows that caught my interest this fall, particularly because they pander to my interests. Namely, Heroes, which mm-hmm. I know I've brought up before.
Absolutely, and I've actually gotten into the show since last we talked about it, so.
Yes, and Season 2 did premiere 2 weeks ago, almost 3 weeks ago, and I was not wowed with the season premiere, but it's Heroes. I love it.
Mm. Heroes is a show that takes a little while for anything to get going.
Yes, and that's probably one of the things I love most about it. Mm. When you go back and you watch season one, Tim Kring, brilliant man. There's actually a contest right now to win a car signed by him. Mm. I would do that. I want a car signed by Tim Kring. But anyway, season one did a very, very remarkable job of storytelling. Mm. Nothing was concluded with any degree of swiftness or nothing was rushed.
Yes.
Everything, it came to light in good time. In fact, there were certain questions, certain issues that came up in the very first episode that were not wrapped up in any way, shape, or form mm-hmm. until the last episode.
And it's very much like a comic book storyline in that it takes several installments to actually get everything explained mm-hmm. and all the points across.
And it also does the comic-esque method of storytelling where there are multiple stories with multiple characters occurring simultaneously mm-hmm. that they impact each other but don't necessarily cross.
Right.
Things that are discussed by one set of characters are taking place in the town next to another set of characters, for example. So it's very interesting. For those of you who did not watch Heroes Season 1, I would recommend watching it before you get into Season 2, because there are a lot of things that just start happening immediately that you really need the Season 1 background to understand or appreciate. But moving past Heroes, The Bionic Woman also premiered. And this has been touted by NBC for quite some time now. And I don't know how many of the listeners out there ever watched the Bionic Woman from the 60s. It was a spinoff of the $6 Million Man. And it followed the story of a once famous tennis player, Jamie Summers. And she, of course, became the Bionic Woman and was a very... very big figure in television back in the day. This isn't so much a remake of that as a conceptual facelift. They took the idea behind it and rewrote the show. They maintained the Jamie Summers name but changed everything. In this Bionic Woman, we find Jamie Summers as a bar worker at a nightclub who is looking after her younger sister in a maternal role who is dating this doctor who specializes in limb transplants and or not transplants but artificial limbs, and of course he is secretly involved in this government project with bionic enhancement, and in the pilot there's an attempted murder on him, and winds up severely injuring Jamie Summers, and he uses his connections and his rank to fit her with these bionic implants, thus turning her into the Bionic Woman. Oh, we have the technology.
Yeah, we can rebuild her.
So,
we can make her better, stronger, faster, prettier.
That's not very nice.
So yes, anyhow, Bionic Woman and Journeyman.
Journeyman, yes, Journeyman. It's all about this guy who can randomly go to the past. Mm-hmm. And he alters it, sometimes for the better, but always in danger of for the worst. And it's a very interesting show. He's not anybody special. It just sort of happens to him, mm-hmm. and it's shaping up to be interesting. I haven't really watched much of it, and then there's a new show that was fairly that came out this season, hosted by Stephen Hawking with a Twilight Zone-esque feel, called Masters of Science Fiction. Where various stories with the Rod Serling style ending, shock
sort
twist
of vibe.
Yeah. Hosted, of course, by one of the most well-known figures in the scientific community, Dr. Stephen Hawking. And I haven't had a chance to see the show myself yet, but one of the teachers I work with is a very big science fiction fan, and she says that she very much enjoys it, that it's done very well.
Mm.
So I'm looking forward to trying to catch it myself. I'm hoping that iTunes will have it.
Right.
I haven't actually looked for it on iTunes, so if they do, then I haven't seen it. If they don't, I hope that they add it.
Mm. And on that note, actually, we're very excited. We have a very special guest. I have no idea how we managed to book him, but we actually have Dr. Stephen Hawking here in the Tunk studio. Say hi, Dr. Hawking.
Hi, guys. It's good to be here.
Hi. It's very nice to meet you today. It's very nice to meet you any day, really. This is a great honor. I mean, you're such a smart guy. You're so well known in the scientific community. You're a best-selling author. A Brief History of Time. We know
which
that.
I actually have on my shelf.
And I'm sure you're a big fan of astrophysics and all that kind of stuff. But Dr. Hawking, we asked you here today because we have a couple of questions that we would really love you to answer. We know you're involved in Masters of Science Fiction. Again, we haven't had time to watch that really, but we will. We will in the coming weeks. And we just had a brief list of questions here that we really wanted to you to answer.
And these are some very, very thought-provoking questions and questions that have evoked a lot of controversy over the years.
So yeah, so the listeners, please stick around for this. This will be a very rewarding experience for you and us, I'm sure. So the I guess I should just start at the top and ask you, Dr. Stephen Hawking, PC or Mac?
It certainly has its own advantages, but I much prefer the simplicity of the Mac system. I do, however, have new systems donated to me every few years, and they are almost always PC-based.
Ah.
And that's interesting that you would say that, too. As I must concede, I did recently purchase a Mac.
You did, yes.
A MacBook.
It's sitting right there. It's quite wonderful.
Yes, it is. And
it's very white.
Yes, and so it's very interesting that you mentioned that, Dr. Hawking.
You cannot beat the Mac for ease of use and even aesthetic appeal, but sometimes the PC just seems more functional.
And another question that we wanted to ask, Coke or Pepsi?
Well, I must admit I did enjoy a Coke every now and then in my younger years. But, as time passed me by, relatively speaking, the number of options Coke presented became so confusing. Coke Classic, Diet Coke, Coke with lemon, Coke with lime, etc., etc. Pepsi seemed like a safe haven of simplicity. Besides, anything endorsed by Britney Spears must be an in item.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not a big soda drinker, but...
Yeah. Well, you know, to each his own. I guess this is one of the biggest ones. We know, you know, scientific guy, all that, but surely you must have music that you really love. And I'm actually told in our studies before you came here, we do a little research on everyone, and I'm actually told that you're a big fan of rap music, actually. So I guess we were asking, could you give us a little something? one of your favorite rap lyrics, maybe?
Y'all done make me lose my mind. Up in here. Y'all done make me go all out. Up in here.
Oh, that's great.
It is a classic.
You just have a way of delivery that's very emotive, you know.
And now this is a very personal question, Dr. Hawking, that there's been a lot of debate over, but we feel like you might be able to answer it more conclusively than many of us could. Superman or Batman?
Yes. This heated issue occupied much of my free time during my early 20s. However, I finally came to a simple and decisive conclusion. Like our president, Batman is a superhero wannabe, with mommy and daddy issues, who happens to have enough money to buy toys that beat everyone else. But, Batman reads. Mano a mano, Superman would make Batman cry.
You know, Dr. Hawking, that makes sense. And I'm gonna have to think about that.
Well, when you're posed with an answer like that by one of the world's greatest intellectuals, you know, you gotta think about it for a little while, you know? You can't just think about it the way you've been thinking about it for the past however many years you've been into comics, you know? It takes on a whole new meaning.
This is true.
So, all right, continuing from our discussion earlier, we also wanted to ask, I know you're probably not as well-versed in the gaming industry as we are, but, you know, just off the top of your head, a snap judgment, Sony or Nintendo?
My favorite of the two is certainly Nintendo. They've always had the creative edge going for them with Mr. Miyamoto, and Sony just seems to be pumping out more of the same all the time.
I know, they're just going down the tubes with this PS3 thing.
And they dropped the ball with the PSP. And you heard it, folks, Dr. Hawking himself has corroborated some of our earlier statements.
Well, I mean, you just got more stuff available for it.
Now, this next question...
This is just for our female listeners.
So, ladies, pay attention.
Right.
This is authority speaking. Dr. Hawking.
Oh, my.
Boxers or briefs?
Real men go commando, Adam.
Oh, all right. You know what? I think we should go back and edit that question out now. Because
ladies see that as a sign of confidence, and are drawn to it like an apple to the wicked skull of Sir Isaac Newton.
Yeah, okay. We're going to get mobbed by email on this. You know that.
Well, contact would be good, but just remember, these are Dr. Hawking's preferences, and I have to say, Dr. Hawking, I do agree.
Okay. All right. a lot of...
You can edit that out.
No, I like that.
Another question, since this is a community of fellow geeks and individuals such as ourselves... A very large question that we would like your opinion on. Star Trek or Star Wars? And I'm talking about, you know, the James T. Kirk Spock Star Trek. William Shatner Star Trek.
With more conventions than there are cockroaches, Star Trek will always be better than Star Wars. William Shatner's immortal performance as James T. Kirk was brilliant. Shatner became a cultural icon, while Star Wars only spun Hayden Christensen trying to kill Ewan McGregor while crying and lining. Oh, the incessant lining.
Oh. All right, I can't say as I disagree with you.
Shatter was a real man.
Oh, very, very well said, Dr.
Very
Hawking.
Nice. All right, and finally, our last question for you, Dr. Hawking, before you have to go. I know you have a very tight schedule to keep.
But this is a very serious question.
Absolutely. Dr. Hawking, are you over 9,000?
Are you kidding me? I'm closer to 10,000.
Thank you very much. It's been a huge honor. Thank you very much, Dr. Hawking. We hope to have you back on the show again. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure, Adam. Take care, both of you.
You may be asking about the music just now, but there was probably within the last month and a half, there is a new Iron Man trailer out on the internet that's quite good, actually. Robert Downey Jr. Just looks great as Tony Stark.
Which I didn't think he would.
Yeah. But anyway, so we'll link to the trailer in the show notes, which you can get from the brand new Tump website, actually.
Yes, we do have a website now.
It's at Tump, TUMPonline.com. And you can find our shows archived there. You can find the show notes in the forum. Or you can get in touch with us, whatever you need to do. And
please do get in touch with us. We would love to hear your opinions, your thoughts. In fact, they may even show up here in the show.
Absolutely. So to do that, of course, you can email us at uncommonmail@gmail.com. That's uncommonmail, M-A-I-L, @gmail.com. Well, I guess that's really all we had to talk about in this episode. So we will see you, well, whenever we see you. I'm not going to commit to anything.
But because apparently our commitments don't always work.
Yeah. So we'll see you on our next episode.
Indeed.
Of the Uncommon Man Podcast. So long.